Well, Duck fans, hello and welcome. Where and whenever you're listening and now watching, this is the Once a Duck podcast. And as you can see, if you're watching, we've made a bunch of big changes. It's been a while since you've heard from us, but I'm Nick Cody at JustFollow61 on Twitter.
I'm Sam at Samuel101TS on Twitter, on Instagram, all the social medias. That's where you can find me.
And we're back, for lack of a better word. You know, it's been a long time. We'd been planning since March for our next episode, and a ton of things have fallen through. As we all know, 2020 has been a crazy year, but we're looking at it from a very optimistic perspective for our show because it's given us a lot of time to get things together, plan out not just our format moving forward, but also our tremendous backgrounds, as you can see. Our fans who've been very loyal and reached out, giving us a ton of not just ideas and suggestions for the show, but even this dope poster right here from at TopDog420. Got to thank you for that. It's the perfect, as you can see, Once a Duck setup. We got the Once a Duck, Always a Duck. Duck right on there. Got it right on my door so you guys can see it every episode. And this hat currently from at Puget Sound Duck that I'm rocking. It has been a great gift. And you guys can reach out to me on Twitter or Sam. Hopefully Sam can get hooked up with some gear. And we're going to give some of this away. Follow us on Twitter at Once a Duck if you aren't already. And we're going to bring you the best interviews from former Ducks, athletes, students, and even Sam, our current student. Sam, how are you doing?
Nick, I'm so happy to be back here. You have no idea. This whole time has been just such a slog to get through. I think everybody else agrees. We are all so happy that there are some Oregon athletics on the horizon. As we record this now, we are just over a week away from Oregon and Stanford kicking off on November 7th. I can't tell you how excited I am to finally get this underway.
Yeah, it feels like it's been forever because it has. You know, we ended our last episode very optimistic about the men's and women's basketball season for the Ducks. And, you know, very, very bittersweet that they didn't get to finish out their seasons the way we wanted. You know, no NCAA tournament this year. And we had to see some tremendous seniors that will move on to their professional careers, and we'll continue to follow with them and hopefully get a couple of them on our show. But yeah, this week has been amazing because the energy I felt just as everything starts to ramp up. And, you know, not just that, but I've also had so many questions, so many curiosities for how this season's really going to play out. As we've seen other conferences come back, we've seen games canceled. We've even seen this last weekend, Oregon having to cancel their second scrimmage as a result of 5 positive COVID tests. So it's a really unpredictable year. Who knows what's going to happen? You know, I just know that I'm excited for it to be back. And you couldn't be more enthusiastic after the season that Oregon had last year and going into this season, even though we clearly lost a couple guys. Sam, talk a little more about, especially in that defensive backfield, how are we looking this year?
Well, what I can tell you is that Oregon definitely lost some people in the defensive backfield. Thomas Graham left early for the NFL. Diamador Lenore looked like he was going to, but decided to come back. But Javon Holland also left. He's likely going to be a first-round pick. That's a very understandable move. A guy, Brady Breeze, a friend of mine, he decided to leave early. I can't blame him at all. I don't know if I would want to play through everything that's going to be going on this season. But Oregon, I think, is going to be okay. They've got some guys stepping up. Mikhail Wright, Verone McKinley, Jamal Hill. There's some talent who's coming in. This Oregon team is deep. This Oregon team has stacked talent, top to bottom. If I'm an Oregon fan, I'm not so much nervous. I'm excited. I'm excited to see what this team can do. I'm excited to see the steps that are going to be taken. Will it all be there game one? I don't know. But by the end of the season, if you're going to tell me this isn't one of the top teams in the country, I'm going to tell you you're crazy.
Absolutely. And I've never been this excited up front for a team. Now, with the guys leaving the defensive backfield, our defense isn't as stacked as we were hoping it would be going into the season. But up front, I can't tell you about the opportunities I'm excited to see with a defensive front that is going to cause a lot of chaos in this conference. You know, Jordan Scott, Kayvon Thibodeau, A ton of those guys up there that are youthful, that no one's even heard of yet, are going to just be demolishing people out there. Especially, you know, there's going to be limited preparation. You might see some teams with a lot of backup offensive linemen in there because of the COVID situation. And on a week-to-week basis, who knows what you might be experiencing. But I do know that up front, I'm excited to see the defense because it looks to be dominant. On offense, we can hope that domination can continue, but we're replacing five guys. And, you know, when you have a guy that was a former Outland Trophy winner that ends up, you know, going on professionally this season and already preparing to go on to the next level, that's something that, you know, adds to the unpredictability of this season. And while I trust that with the recruiting and the time we've had to develop these guys, that they'll be ready, you just really don't know until you see it on the field.
And that's exactly it. We're going to have to wait to see him on the field. One thing I know will be a good challenge up front is that first game is against Stanford. I know we're going to have a Stanford week episode where we're going to get much more in depth about this, but we all know what Stanford is. We know that they are stacked in the trenches. That's where they like to play. They play hardball. They don't mess around there. It's going to be a great challenge for both a young offensive line and an experienced defensive line to be able to play against those guys. I know you have plenty of experience having to deal with the power that Stanford has up front.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things we're definitely going to get into next week when we cover Stanford a bit more is my experience. Is Stanford was definitely one of the schools that recruited me very hard. I was going through, as I was setting up all this great fare for my background decorations, I was able to go and find old recruiting letters, baby.
All right.
We're going to go through exactly what was Jim Harbaugh telling Nick Cody. So while we know you're going to enjoy this episode and we're going to get a good preview about what's going to come this season, and we're going to talk a little bit about, you know, the seasons that have already wrapped up in 2020, look forward to next week, getting the dirt on Stanford and Harbaugh, especially because I've got tea and I'm going to spill it.
Ooh, spilling tea. But once a duck does best.
Absolutely. No other way, Sam. You know, that's what gets the clicks, they tell me.
I tend to agree with you. That's the reason that I listen back. I just want to rehear the tea.
But we'll get to that. Some other awesome things I found while we were digging up is the 2011 Oregon Football Life Manual. So another great thing about being on YouTube, if you're just listening now on our normal audio platforms, you can find on SoundCloud or Spotify or Apple Podcasts. You may not be watching right now, but I'm holding up a binder that has, it was mainly a collection of things that we'd been handed out, provided in meetings, a lot of life lessons and guidance under not only just Coach Chip Kelly, but, you know, Assistant Athletic Director James Harris, who really put a lot of this together with a lot of thought. And coming out of, you know, 2020, we've all had, you know, our own experiences without being able to have sports and football. But I just wanted to share this quote about attitude moving forward for not just the podcast, but all our Duck fans and sports fans in general. We cannot change our past. We cannot change the fact that people act in a certain way. We cannot change the inevitable. The only thing we can do is play on the one string we have, and that is our attitude. From Charles R. Swindle. And I thought that was really important just after pulling it out here with Sam pre-show. To share, because, you know, the vibes of our programming going forward are going to be a lot more free-flowing. We're not going to try and confine episodes to 1 hour. We're going to have a lot of content out there. You guys are going to be able to view our great interviews individually if you don't want to see us just talking back and forth. But if you do, it's going to be here for you.
And I can't wait to be able to provide people with that. We're going to have some really fun interviews this year. We've already got a couple scheduled that I think are going to be just awesome. Really good time for the fans to listen to. But besides that, we're going to be talking football. We're going to be talking basketball. When the time comes, we're going to be talking track and softball and baseball. We're going to have a lot for y'all this year. And I think I'm really excited to be able to bring it to the forefront.
Yeah, we also might have to bring back the Once a Duck happy hour once in a while. Once this sober October is ended and football season for the Pac-12 begins. But in the meantime, you know, we do know that there are people out there that have missed us, have been asking us where episodes are. And, you know, we just want to say we're excited to be back and we hope to be able to bring you guys content every week this season.
Now, Nick, on that note, talking about this season, what I have pulled up in front of me right now is Oregon's 6-game schedule for the coming season. I was hoping we could go through it a little bit. I could get some of your very much more thought out and thought through opinions than I know I'll be able to have. You know, a lot of these teams you played against, I believe, all of these teams at one time or another. And so I just kind of want to go through this a bit game by game and kind of get some ideas from you. Of course, we're going to go further in depth with all of these games when the time comes. But since this is a season preview episode, I figured we may as well preview the season.
Absolutely. Why not? Let's go for it.
November 7th, 4:30, ABC. Yes, that means Chris and Kirk are going to be in town, even though there's not going to be anybody else in that stadium besides some cardboard cutouts. What I can tell you, though, Oregon-Stanford, always a great game. Oregon, a team with some even playoff hopes coming into the season. Stanford are coming off in a down season. They weren't very good last year, but David Shaw is a great coach. He's the kind of guy who can whip his team into shape when need be. Stanford's been a kryptonite to Oregon over probably the last 10, even 15 years or so. It's been a difficult matchup. Let's just talk a little bit. What do you see kind of going down in a game like this, a week from it, a week out, just a little bit of perspective on what you might expect from an Oregon-Stanford matchup?
Well, you know, it's always a lot better to have that Stanford matchup at home. Going down to the farm is already a strange enough place, and I can't imagine in times of COVID that the attendance numbers are going to be that much different for Stanford. So it being a home game is very, very good. You know, because we've had times where the team's gone down there and we've expected a win and the strangest things have happened. In fact, when I was first on the travel squad in 2009 was one of those years. We went down and it just felt like everything was going wrong. Maybe that was just me because I was the right guard on PAT and field goal. And they figured that out and were trying to rush, you know, 300 pounders into my gap. And I was getting blown on my back every play. But I remember that day being very frustrating and disappointing. And, you know, it came out that in that outcome because Andrew Luck, you know, that was probably one of the first games that I remember, you know, national broadcasters talking about Andrew Luck is a star. And he lit us up a bunch that day. And so Stanford always has the capability of that. And David Shaw, as long as he's there, that team has a chance. But you also have to wonder what's going on down there. Obviously, I had a friend in high school that went to Stanford under a little bit of an academic degree. Not quite the athlete, but you can brag quite a bit about having any kind of a Stanford academic background. But he went there and he was telling me what the big problem is, I guess, is something to do with because of the cost of their post-grad programs, a lot of transfers are happening as soon as guys are getting their at least graduate undergrad eligibility done instead of, you know, double majoring or doing something like that. So a lot of transfers we've seen this offseason. I don't have an exact number for it, but I remember it just being astonishing, double digits. And we've already seen their quarterback go down to the SEC and his first week, you know, absolutely lighted up in Mike Leach's system. So you have to wonder what effect that will have on the team's psyche, but you have to believe a David Shaw coach team until proven otherwise is going to come out and going to be a tough matchup. And it's not going to be easy to score points and they're going to do really great things with ball possession. That's what Stanford always is really good about is taking teams, you know, like Oregon out of it by giving them limited possessions. So I'm hoping Oregon can come out and just establish itself early at home. Even now, though we don't have the normal odds and crowd, I hope that's a major advantage for us and that, you know, we can get a couple of real nice, easy drives going early, kind of usher in Tyler Shuck in a nice kind of a comfortable way. It would be perfect if we could see it like Mariota came out my senior year and just drove down the field like it was just putting a key in the ignition. But I think with this offense and what we're going to see this year and some new things being implemented, it might take some time, but who knows, with all the preparation and everything going down this year, the unexpected cap, and I'm prepared for it. So I expect it to be a good game.
Game 2, 11:14. No time given yet, no TV channel given yet, but I can assume it'll probably be a nationally televised game again, especially if Oregon's able to get that win week one against Stanford. Oregon at Washington State.
Yeah.
2018. Up to Pullman. I actually thought it was a grand old time until the game started. A good environment up there. They're not going to have fans, just like every single Pac-12 game. I'm going to keep saying it because it's going to keep being true. No fans up there, but you're playing in Pullman in November. There's a chance for some weather. What do you see going down up there in the Palouse?
Yeah, I think the one thing I look forward into this game is I hope this team seeks retribution for their last time in Pullman, where it was very clear that from the very first snap, the crowd noise was a significant factor, and that team just didn't feel ready. It felt like they were coming off a big win, and, you know, it was a prime time game day, you know. It just didn't seem like anything was going to happen right that day. And I'm really hoping that, you know, there's been a lot of turnover at Wazoo, but then again, they've also had, you know, some different circumstances for practicing. And, but they also have to bring in an entirely new system, you know, Rolovich, brand new coach, run and gun, going from Mike Leach's system, which is so much about spacing, timing, having great athletes at receiver, to run and gun. We'll have to see how it translates, but I do expect Oregon to come out on top because, again, as you said, there won't be fans there. We're going to take that factor out. Pullman's never an easy trip. I know personally when I only got to go once, thankfully. The second time we played them in my career, that is an away game. It was in Seattle Seahawks home stadium. So that was a lot better than going to Pullman because essentially you fly into Moscow, Idaho. We would stay there in a hotel and then drive, you know, 35, 40 minutes into Pullman, which is, you know, beautiful. But, you know, if you just got treatment at the hotel on your way over to the locker room, you're already like, oh, starting to get tight again, all kinds of stuff like that you just never know. But I think the Ducks hopefully are going to lay it on them and get a little bit of payback for 2018.
All right. Two games down, four games to go. The next one, on a short week, a Friday night ball game, it'll be 7:30 p.m. ESPN, a little Pac-12 after dark action. Chip Kelly brings UCLA into an empty Autzen Stadium to face off against the Ducks in Oregon's second home game.
Yeah, you know, I'm looking forward to this one a lot. The crossover games that they've picked for the South and North Division. You can tell the Pac-12 was definitely trying to make it a little bit easier on some of the favorited teams. And that definitely feels like a slight to Chip a little bit. You know, I can understand he came out and sounded a little bit frustrated pretty early on. But I think it's going to be exciting seeing him go back to Eugene. It could go a lot of ways. No one really knows, but, you know, their quarterback even said that he's got to come back this year. You know, that team might be really playing for something. You just never know. And I know that with Chip's system, it's all about buy-in. And that's the big thing from UCLA. Did they buy in this year or not? And traditionally, UCLA, just their players, their guys that they've brought through, it just hasn't worked out like that. And we'll see. I expect Oregon to, again, with the home field advantage and just kind of a bit more consistency and players that we know and have seen versus UCLA, who it feels, you know, they're constantly kind of trying to, aside from the quarterback position, it feels like moving in a lot of new players. You see there with the Chargers and Herbert, you can see Josh Kelly's doing really well in the NFL now. And you just wonder how UCLA is going to be able to play this year, especially with everything going on in LA.
Another Friday night game the day after Thanksgiving, Oregon versus Oregon State. Do we have a new name for the rivalry yet? Not quite yet. And until then, I'm going to call it the Platypus Bowl just because it's a whole lot of fun. Oregon versus Oregon State, a Beaver team on the rise. Coach Jonathan Smith has done a good job over the last couple of seasons. They've got one of the best edge rushers in the conference. What do you predict for this Oregon-Oregon State rivalry game?
Another Beaver fail along the Oregon Trail is what I predict this year, Sam. Yeah, we went into last year's game giving a preview, and I go back and I listen to that episode. I'm like, ooh, we expected a lot more out of the Beavers. It was a cold game, but it was pretty sloppy. No excuses, but yeah, I don't see – I've heard a lot of people that talk about, you know, Oregon State does have – you know, same offensive coordinator, same offense, quarterback that they started in last year's rivalry game, last year's Platypus Bowl game, if I may. But I just don't think necessarily they're going to get it done this year. I don't think that the, at least against the Ducks, I think the shortened schedule, and that, you know, being able to have the unpredictability of this season, I think they might end up with 3 or 4 wins this season. But I think against the Ducks, they're just the talent outmatched. You know, I'd love for it to be a good game. I'd wish we could go back to the game again this year, but yeah, I'm definitely going to be taking the Ducks in that one as a favorite too.
The next game on the schedule, the second of 2 back-to-back road games, Oregon travels to Cal. Cal is a really interesting team because under Coach Wilcox, their defense has improved tenfold. They are a stout defensive team with an offense that can get it done when they need to. The last time these two teams played last season, it was a low-scoring, grind-it-out type of ball game. Oregon plays probably the second and third best teams in the Pac-12 North, given that Oregon's the first, in our opinion, in the last 2 weeks of the season. Oregon versus Cal down in the Bay. What do you see?
Well, I think I have to be careful, tread lightly here. I have some friends and coworkers that are Cal grads, and I try to be real nice to Cal. And going down to the Bay is tough. I think Oregon in this one, this is going to be one of their biggest road tests this season. But I think one of the biggest keys is going to be how much pressure can they get on Chase Garbers and how healthy is he? Because I believe, unless I'm mistaken, every game he's started and finished in, he's won. So I think the key to going down to Cal is, you know, that offensive production is always going to be iffy. There's always seems to be something that goes weird, a turnover, an injury. I know that we had to gut it out that 2010 season with one of the weirdest Chip Kelly drives, an 8-minute, 9-minute, 11 play scoring drive. You know, you didn't see that out of our offenses, but you just had to do whatever it took to get it done down at Cal. So I think the big pressure, the big key to that game is going to be how much pressure can we get on the quarterback up front.
And finally, another rivalry game, this one to be played at Autzen Stadium, a game that we both went to last year, Oregon versus Washington. There's not much more I can say about this. We will know who the Ducks are by then. We will know who the Huskies are by then. That game has the potential to be for the Pac-12 North, for a chance to go to the Pac-12 championship game. It could be for all the marbles, as I like to say. What do you see happening in this rivalry game?
Well, for our Husky Hate Week version 2, I only see one real possible outcome. Dubs down, baby. Dubs all the way down each and every day. All day, as you know, if you follow me on Twitter. I think that I was at the basketball game where Jimmy Lake said that UW will continue West Coast dominance. And I remember just thinking it, looking around and hearing people clap for that and thinking these people really don't understand that the last 2 years, Oregon's really gotten everything they could take from UW. You've even seen them lay down and try and play tricky in their own end zone on kickoffs, trying to be sneaky, because that's just how much, you know, I would like to say it's respect, but it's kind of just at this point, envy. UW really, really tends to envy Oregon. And the funny thing for me is, you definitely see there a lot of chatter this year, but I don't see necessarily where it comes from, because if you're not returning your quarterback, you have a brand new head coach, and you weren't able to see the spring game that you were going to have the highest attendance in the Pac-12 on accordingly, you know, I just don't know what faith you have. But the other thing going into this game is, who knows where we're at that point in the season in terms of health and, you know, people that are eligible. And, you know, that is, even though it's a shortened season, who knows what could possibly happen by then. And maybe, you know, they have a lot of players that are stepping up at that time, and anything can happen on the football field. But I've heard a lot of confidence up here at the Seattle Once a Duck studio from some Husky fans around here. And I don't get where it comes from, unless it's specifically towards the Apple Cup.
Nick, we just ran through the entire 6-game schedule. Before we go to our first interview of the season, what do you think that final record will look like?
Well, you know, I think we're going to go and win each and every one of these games. And I would really like us to see USC or ASU come playoff. Well, not playoff time, but, you know, this will be our playoff. The Pac-12 needs to look at it this way because, you know, from the buzz going on this season, who knows how the bowl games or how any of the playoff games are going to work out. So really the mantra of a one game season each week, it's never been more perfect for a season than this season. Literally the Ducks have to go out if they want to even have a chance to think about the playoffs, which they learned last year. If you spend too much time thinking about, you can miss sight of your goal that week. If they play every game like a 1 week championship, they might have a chance, but they literally have to go and not just win games that they should be favored in, but they've got to do it impressively. And that's another thing about being favored. It's hard. If you win a game by 1 point, there are guys that are going to hate, you know, in the media that are going to hold it against you. There are people that have that national media perspective that don't know these teams that just see that record and that score, and they may not have even caught the whole game. So those are the things that worry me. But I see at the end of this season, I do see the Ducks claiming a Pac-12 championship. Maybe that's my bias. Maybe that's the show's bias. And maybe that's me not wanting to upset our audience. But, I just think with everything we've heard and from the inside with our limited access, it seems like the Ducks are going to be as ready as any team. And that's one of the only concerns I really had going into the shortened season.
Well, folks, that is our Oregon football season preview. Coming up, we've got a treat for you guys. Nick, tell them what we got coming up interview-wise.
Joining us for our first guest since we've been on a long hiatus, we really wanted someone that wasn't only a former Duck with tons of Duck experience, but also someone that I have a little bit of interview experience. In fact, 9 years ago, when you were working at the Register Guard, Rob Mosley, editor-in-chief of GoDucks.com, you were still on the handle at Duck Football on Twitter, and I reached out and I asked you, hey, I'm going through a journalism class all about interviewing. We need great interviews. And I thought no one better, because just our little experiences after football practices, I thought this guy is a great interviewer. He has so much experience as not just a Duck, but a sports fan in general. And I loved your perspective on things. Rob, how did you get to where you are now since that moment?
Well, 2013 was the year I made the jump to U of O. You know, the newspaper business, I kind of saw the writing on the wall for just how things were trending nationally. The Register Guard, where I worked, was awesome, like family run paper, and the Baker family there did an awesome job. But, you know, things were trending towards corporate ownership, which kind of changed the game, unfortunately, for local newspapers. So I tried to get out ahead of it a little bit and start thinking about what my next move was. I've never been a big kind of five-year plan type guy or anything like that, but started thinking maybe I needed to think about a next move. And then the other major decision point was kind of the stratification of voices online, where you kind, you know, kind of Deadspin was just catching on, and Deadspin was all about, you know, having fun at people's expenses, kind of digging up scandals, trolling, things like that. And it was entertaining. I loved reading Deadspin, but it wasn't the kind of, you know, news guy I wanted to be. And so it sort of felt like the eyeballs were either going to go to that or kind of the official team sites, kind of the fan sites. And that just seemed a lot more kind of in character with just who I am and what I like doing. So, which is not to disparage any other kind of writing or journalism or any of that, but just what fit me best was talking to U of O and seeing if a position here would work out. And so, yeah, 7 years later, still at it, haven't screwed it up yet. Every day there's a chance to, but I'm still hanging on by a thread, so loving it every day.
Rob, I want to take it back a little bit, way before any of that went down, when you were actually in a very similar position to what I'm in now as a University of Oregon student back in the late 90s. What was that process like for you, seeing everything as it was then and now 20 years plus later, being able to look at this program and seeing the evolution that's occurred across the board?
You're talking about Oregon football?
Oregon, the brand in general.
Got it. Yeah, I'll be honest with you. Like I grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area. So I was a big pro sports fan. I didn't follow college sports. It just sounds weird to say now, but like when I got to Oregon, you know, I'm not sure I'd ever watched an Oregon football game. You know, when I was going through the application process, I'm not even sure if I knew for sure if Oregon was the Ducks or the Beavers, as strange as that is to say. Because yeah, now the whole country and even, you know, parts of the whole world, when they see the O, they know it's the Oregon Ducks. So things that not to suggest my limited viewpoint when I was a high school kid, it was universal by any means, but I don't think there are many kids now at the age now that I was then who would make that same mistake, because it's just it's changed exponentially, and obviously Phil and Penny Knight have a huge role in that. We owe them a huge debt for helping elevate this program, but a ton of other supporters too. So it has been fun to kind of track that. My freshman year, I went to the Washington game in 1994. I mean, I was in the student section as an Oregon freshman for Kenny Wheaton's pick. I went down to the Rose Bowl that year, came back in that week. Oregon men's basketball hands UCLA its only loss of the year, their national championship season. I mean, and so I wasn't there for Chris Miller and Bill Musgrave. I wasn't there for the Jerry Fry years, but I sort of feel like in some regards, I was there kind of on the ground floor for kind of when this really happened for Oregon. Cause I, you know, the 95 season was that Cotton Bowl season, that the famous year when Oregon goes to a back-to-back New Year's Day games, loses again. Phil Knight huddles up with Mike Bellotti, says, "What do you need?" Mike Bellotti says, "I need an indoor practice facility." Boom, the Mashofsky Center is constructed. Then the new logo, the rebrand with the new O, the uniforms become a thing. You know, the rest is history. My last fall as a student was 1998, and I went to the Aloha Bowl that season to cover it for the Daily Emerald, and that's when the new uniforms, 99 was the first season in brand new, you know, when the whole rebrand. So I was still a student when the whole rebrand happened too, which is just it's just wild to think. So it is I've been lucky in a zillion ways. I was pretty fortunate to kind of been around right at this kind of epochal moment in the history of the program when things just totally took off.
Yeah, and on that evolution, you've been able to encapsulate such great, you know, special talents that got drafted, like from Akili all the way up to Justin Herbert, who we're seeing ball out right now this season. If you could pick just one player, any sport, from when you were a student and when you were covering teams, that was your favorite to watch. If you had to pick just one and you had to erase all your memories of all the others, what would you pick?
That is an open-ended question. All right. From when I was a student, I was a huge fan of the Jeremy Asher, Rich Rule linebacker tandem from that gangrene defense. Those guys were, you know, they had the huge shoulder pads and you know, they're, you know, good dudes, they're characters. You know, Peter Sermon and Matt Smith came right after those guys. And, you know, I was about the same age as those guys. And so those linebackers, those two linebacker duos, I really, really, and there were some other guys in between there, Chris Vandiver and Aaron Chevron, but there was just some, you know, some good linebackers in there that I enjoyed watching. I don't know, for some reason, that's the first guys to jump into my mind when I was a student. And since then, man, I've been fortunate to cover a lot of special kids. Maybe there's some recency bias, but watching Sabrina Ionescu and just the way she handled herself, the way she excelled on the court, but the way she handled herself off the court too, and particularly earlier this year with the tragedy with Kobe and everything, she's a one in a million kid. And I've Marcus was a one in a million guy. Ashton Eaton is a one in a million guy. Sabrina, another Bay Area kid too. So I've got a little soft spot for her that way. Another San Francisco Bay Area, Northern California kid. So she was. I don't have to tell anybody listening to this, probably she was pretty remarkable. Still is.
I kind of want to transition into the now a little bit. We've been able to talk a little bit about the past and everything, which is something that we specialize in here. But one of the things that excited me most about being able to get you on here was the amount of insight we were going to be able to have, especially with college football on the horizon, as well as the other sports being able to pick up soon after. I want to talk about this era of Oregon football that we're in, something like the Mario Cristobal era, if you would. Going into it, going into the hire, What were your kind of thoughts and expectations of it? And have those expectations been exceeded at all over the last 2-3 seasons?
Yeah. You know, we'd been through such transition the last couple of years. You know, 2016 was just such a hard year for everyone. I mean, and when you go through it, you know, on the inside, it's just, it feels so personal. It was just so hard. And, you know, that staff was a bunch of good guys and guys that had been around for a long time. And it was traumatic to see them go. And the way that season went, and then with the excitement with Coach Taggart, and, you know, he really did a kind of accomplish part of his mission, which was to kind of get us punched in the face and turned around and kind of, you know, stop believing our own headlines a little bit, for lack of a better term. Ironically, it's ironic for me to say something like that, use a metaphor like that, but, and then for him to leave, it was just such turmoil. And the guys who are in the program, at this point, I'm, you know, 44 years old. I think I can call them kids. I think, you know, it's like, they're young kids. That's a little much for some of those guys to be dealing with. And so you just want some stability. You know, you want them to feel like, you know, optimistic about their future, to feel like we're on a good track, to feel like as an athletic department, we're providing, you know, a structure that can allow them to be successful and win. And so when they all rallied behind Mario, it was like, all right, sweet. If they believe, you know, I'm not the decision maker, but just my perspective, you know, outside the room of decisions being made, is if, you know, if the kids believe in him and Rob Mullins thinks, you know, there are other reasons too to support making him the guy, that's awesome. Just give these kids, you know, some stability, something to kind of latch on to and be stoked about and be invigorated by, because they've dealt with a whole lot the last couple of years. You know, the thing I kind of underestimated, I'm not the biggest like recruiting guy in the world. I mean, I follow kind of who are recruiting and I hope we get all the good guys, but I'm not like, you know, I don't sweat it, you know, too hard. You know, I think, you know, Nick, you know, you saw in internally every year, a bunch of guys come in and, you know, a few guys who are supposed to be stars don't end up being stars. And a few guys that nobody ever really heard of in recruiting end up, you know, being great players. So, you know, I've kind of learned through experience only to kind of put so much stock into recruiting. So I think I'm learning now just what it means to have someone who recruits at the level Mario does. I think I underestimated the impact, you know, just what it meant to get somebody who recruits at the level he does. Cause it's just, he's so relentless. I mean, it's on his mind all the time. He's everything that happens every minute of the day, he views to some extent through the prism of recruiting. And it's just amazing. I mean, Coach Moorhead was doing an interview recently where someone asked him kind of what's different about this program and the way it recruits. And he said, it's to have the head coach that's as engaged as Mario Cristobal is just different than anywhere else. And it's just, he's the driver. He sets the tempo and you either run at his pace or you fall behind and get left behind. And it's just, you know, so I knew he was like, you know, considered this elite recruiter, and I was like, okay, that's great. You know, we'll get some dudes. Cool. But to see it up close and then to see, you know, the dividends and to see just what, you know, that kind of talent looks like on a day in day out basis at practice and in games, it's really something. It really is.
Yeah, and on that same note, back when we had our interview, it was in the O-line room, and it was a real good representation of our O-line at the time, you know, a nice paint job on it, you know, maybe a 3 or 4 star setup, a couple cups laying out, not looking too nice, not anybody's priority or showing anything off in recruiting, but we got the job done. You look at our offensive line now, and even just talking to Coach Cristobal myself, the one time I have, and he's already talking about, hey, you should come out and see these guys hit in practice. He's already talking about these guys going through the pre-practice drills. What do you see on the inside as that mentality change that really an O-lineman brings to a program like Oregon?
Yeah, I think, and I do want to give a nod again to Coach Taggart. You know, I think, you know, kind of the toughness, just day-to-day that being reinforced. We have to be tougher and we have to be blue collar. And we're not just, you know, we're not what everybody thinks Oregon is, where we're just glitz and glamour and we're, you know, we're all finesse and we're not power. I mean, Coach Taggart really does deserve a lot of credit for kind of helping kind of rebrand things internally you know, this is what we're going to be known as. We're going to be known as physical and in your face and tough, and not kind of the worst cliches about what Oregon is about. But Mario absolutely embodies that, you know, every single day. I mean, he is the intensity he brings. You know, you compare it to like a Coach Bellotti, who was just the cool customer, you know, maybe fitting that he was like the Ducks coach, you know, that image of the duck that, you know, is paddling frantically beneath the surface, but above the water just looked calm and cool and collected. I mean, that was Coach Bellotti. You know, he just oozed kind of cool. And, you know, where Mario, just the intensity just bleeds out of him. And it just, he exudes that through every pore. So, but, you know, Coach Mirabal deserves a ton of that credit for what happens with the offensive line too. And I do think this year in particular, you know, it seems to me Coach Cristobal has taken a little bit more of a holistic approach. I mean, he's, you know, there'd be some times in the past where you'd still think maybe he was the offensive line coach. And this year in particular, I think you'd be much less likely to make that mistake. You know, he's roaming around the practice fields a little bit more, and you know, it's definitely, those are Coach Mirabal's guys. And you know, so he definitely deserves a ton of credit. You know, the working relationship Mario and Coach Mirabal have is really something. They obviously go back, you know, decades to high school and everything, and it's you can see it on display every day. It's impressive, and it pays dividends.
So we've talked a lot about the building of this team, how this team's kind of come together over the last couple of seasons. I want to start to get specific about this 2020 season. It's going to be a season kind of unlike anybody's ever seen before. Only 6 games. It's going to be a compact schedule. It's starting late. It's in unprecedented circumstances. What about how this team is built do you think will benefit them going into such an unusual season?
Well, I mean, I think you want to have the older guys are, the more experienced guys are, kind of the more they've been through, the more they can weather. And so when you have a Jordan Scott and an Austin Fowley and an Isaac Slade Matautia that have played a ton of football, Nick Pickett on the back end, Diamador Lenore on the back end. You know, there's some veteran guys on the other side too, and Hunter Campmoyer and Johnny Johnson and CJ Verdell. Yeah, to some extent, nobody knows exactly what we're getting into right now. But, you know, if you've got some veteran guys to lean on, you know, you'd assume they can kind of roll with the punches a little bit. And so I think it does help to have guys like that around. But it also helps to just be really, really, really good. And, you know, Kayvon Thibodeau doesn't have the experience those other guys have, but he's really, really, really good. You know, Mace Funa is that guy. You know, it sure looks like, you know, Sewell and Flo, the freshman linebackers, and even LaDuke, you know, can be those guys that have impact. And, you know, on the back end, there's young guys. Rhone McKinley, I mean, that guy's as sharp as it comes, you know, just a sophomore. But, you know, I don't think there's going to be a lot that happens in front of him that he sees the offense doing that he doesn't know how to diagnose and try to get the defense set for. So you're not going to be perfectly equipped to handle whatever comes, you know, particularly if, you know, God forbid some, you know, there's some sort of, you know, a sickness befall some position room or something like that. And somebody having to scramble and make up, you know, and fill gaps there. I mean, there can be things that happen in these circumstances that no one's properly equipped to deal with. But you know, if you've got quite a bit of experience and you've got a heck of a lot of talent, you feel pretty good about your chances to win games kind of regardless of what else is going on around you.
Yeah. And in terms of everything that's going on, I wanted to know, you know, players got to go back home. Things were up in the air for a long time. I was really interested this season in seeing what players took the off season time and really developed on their own. Who is somebody you're seeing right now that you don't think people are talking about that just came back and just wowed you?
Well, you know, now we're a couple weeks into camp. You know, I think, you know, people are starting to hear some of these names, but, you know, I think of Jamal Hill, you know, in the defensive secondary, you know, replacing Javon Holland was going to be a big deal. And, And Jamal Hill just, you know, he looks like a dude back there, just a playmaker. You know, I think Sean Dollar's amongst the running backs. Some switch flipped for him last December. And he was big time in the bowl prep. You know, he played Wisconsin's big running back for the scout team during the bowl prep and got rewarded with some reps in the Rose Bowl. And, you know, so maybe there's kind of a chicken and the egg question. Did that jumpstart him, or was he jumpstarted and therefore he was rewarded with that? You know, it kind of goes hand in hand, but you know, he looks he just looks explosive and quick and just more electric. You know, Devin Williams at receiver, just the sky's the limit for that guy. You know, I think, you know, he knew last year he wasn't going to play. You know, it can be hard, you know, day in, day out to bring it every day. And so, you know, sometimes guys in that situation will have, you know, consistency issues where, you know, it's kind of a roller coaster. You know, some days they look like world beaters. Some days, you know, it's kind of that you're bummed that, you know, you're not going to play that weekend. And so, you know, it's hard to have the same energy level. And not to suggest Devin went through that, because I'm not in his head, but just the consistency of production and playmaking looks different from him right now than it did a year ago. You know, I do think Tyler Shuck looks like a guy who just continues to elevate his game. CJ Verdell, you know, Joe Moorhead was asked the other day, kind of who are guys on offense that are really standing out. And, you know, I think we all fall into the trap this time of year of, you know, you're looking for the next big thing. So it's like, oh, is it Trey Benson or is it Chris Hudson or, you know, these young guys? And the first name he said was CJ Verdell. It's like, oh yeah, you know, guys run for 1,000 yards in back-to-back years. He's pretty good. Of course he's going to stand out. You know, that just makes perfect sense. And he, you know, CJ's ability to, you know, run between the tackles and break tackles and run with a physical presence we all know about, but he just looks like he has an extra gear and just a little bit more wiggle. We kind of saw it, I think, for the first time really against Utah. He really opened people's eyes in the conference championship game last year where, you know, it wasn't just put my head down and go and run over a guy. He's got a little scoot to him too, where he can make a guy miss. And if he's doing that, he's just, you know, I don't think there's many guys probably in the country that are much better. And he looks really good. So I could go on and on and on. It's that time of year. It's a really exciting time of year. And, you know, at this point, you just can't wait to see the guys actually take the field in the game and just see how it plays out against another team.
Personally, I see Oregon as kind of faced with a somewhat unique challenge in that not only are they implementing a new offense and a new offensive coordinator, but they have a new quarterback as well as a fully new offensive line. What do you think a reasonable expectation for this offense is for Duck fans moving into the season?
Well, I think Coach Moorhead's offense, you know, is really going to be beneficial under those circumstances because it presents it throws a lot of possibilities at a defense. It's really going to keep a defense on its toes with all the RPO stuff he likes to do. I mean, there's just, you know, there's, even if you correctly diagnose, you know, what play is going to be run, there's still 3-4 options that can be thrown at you depending on what the quarterback sees. And I think Tyler's a sharp enough guy to run it. I think Anthony Brown's a sharp enough guy to run it too, if he's called upon too. So, you know, I think that takes pressure off, hey, we're just going to line it up and run it down your throat. You know, that would put a little bit more pressure on, you know, a young offensive line, for instance, or, you know, not all these guys are young with some transfers and, but newer faces. You know, it's not going to be quite the same pressure as that, or, hey, we're going to drop back and throw it 70 times. And these guys know they need to pass protect, you know, on every single one of those snaps. There's a lot of pressure because the defense is going to be bringing it. Well, you know, defense can't do that because there's just going to be a lot of different options to throw. So I do think, you know, this is an offense that's going to keep a defense on its toes. And that can help when you're going through some transition like that. You do need your quarterback to be sharp to run this. There's a lot to process, you know, and I think we saw that, you know, you always expect the defense to be ahead of an offense early in the camp. And that was no different this year. But, you know, I think part of that could have been that, you know, there's a lot to diagnose with this offense when you're from the quarterback. But things have started to click, you know, week two and now into week three. And I think Tyler looks like he's, and Anthony as well, you know, capable of, you know, kind of operating that, running the show there, orchestrating that. And so, I think that's, hey, this is the time for optimism. You know, that is a reason for optimism, to think that, hey, despite some of the questions you bring up, which are reasonable, you know, this schematically, this offense might be equipped to kind of help kind of ease the pressure on some newer faces.
With everything that's gone on in 2020 with COVID-19 and all the big bodies that play football, I've been very interested in watching a lot of the bigger guys slim down. And, you normally get those guys that gain weight, but I was very intrigued by, especially Jordan Scott, a guy, like you said, that came in with the Taggart era and really helped change how we were playing football in the trenches right up front, and even, you know, came out. And I would say, was a significant reason we won the Husky game in 2018, because, you know, it took five guys to block him every play. And I just speak to some of the things the team is doing that are a bit different this year in preparations in terms of COVID. And is that one of them consciously that the big guys are thinking about, especially?
I don't know if those two things are necessarily tied together. I think we're seeing from Coach Cristobal, you know, we saw it particularly with that offensive line class a couple years ago that, you know, Panay was in and Steven Jones and, you know, Dawson Yaramillo, who's still around from that group, and a couple other guys. But then the defensive line classes, you know, the Brandon Dorlis, Christian Williams, Ken Ware Hudson group last year, and then this year, you know, a fresh crop on the D line, just massive. It's like recruit massive dudes with huge frames, and maybe, you know, as a product of that, guys might be carrying some bad weight, and then get them in here. Get them on the nutrition program, get them on the strength conditioning program. And over time, year over year, every year, they're going to change, their body. So I just think, you know, I don't know how much of a function of, you know, how crazy this year particularly is. I just feel like that's sort of, that seems to be, whether it's a sort of stated intention or not, it seems to be kind of the process now. Just get giant dudes for the trenches, you know, be willing to take a little bit of bad weight, knowing that if it's a big frame and an athletic guy, you can reshape him. With a guy like Jordan, yeah, it's been a year over year over year process. And, you know, Popo Amavai is another guy who, his body looks totally different. And he's, you know, when you've got a guy who's still that massive, you know, 290 or whatever, but yet feels quicker and feels light on his feet. I mean, that's a problem up front. And we saw Popo, kind of the light went on for him kind of in the middle of last year. And I think he's going to be a really good player on the D line this year. So, and again, you know, same idea, you know, just came in, was a first day he walks into practice, you're like, oh my God, that guy looks different than the normal freshman, not necessarily in a good way. But then 2 years later, he looks like just a dude, you know? And that's that just seems like kind of how we do business now.
Rob, we want to let you go sooner than later, because we know your night's still not going to be done even when we're done talking to you here. The last question I'm going to ask you is a question I like to try to ask everybody, and it's just because I'm a nerd about the subject. I have to get into it. I always want to. What was the one time where you saw Oregon come out of that locker room, and whatever it was they were wearing head to toe, you just went, wow, okay, this one is unbelievable. This one's outstanding. This uniform set is next level.
Probably the duck uniforms against Colorado. I loved those. I'm not a big uniform guy. You know, we put out the photos, you know, Thursday or Friday, whatever. And I mean, you're like, all right, that looks cool. Every once in a while, we'll put out the preview and I'll be like, oh, that's a little different. But then, you know what, the guys run out of the tunnel, I mean, he's like, oh, that looks fine. You know, it's like, I don't get too high or too low about uniforms. The duck uniform I thought looked really, really, really sharp. And I think I'll forever lament the fact that game went the way it did, cause I would love if that had been part of the rotation for longer than just one game.
Well, as the official Once a Duck podcast, we approve of those uniforms also.
Outstanding.
We want to thank you for coming on and giving us this great insight to duck football. In fact, everyone, you can find him at Twitter, on Twitter, at Duck Football. Thank you, Rob Mosley.
Absolutely. Anytime, guys. I appreciate you having me.
Man, it was so awesome to have Rob on, just to be able to talk with us about Oregon football in the past, Oregon football in the present. I'm really excited to see what this future season has in store.
Yeah, I think he gave us a lot of insight. I think hopefully all our fans out there got just as much from it as we did going into the season, gave us a little more to expect, and definitely brought, you know, those optimism levels we were already talking about going through, talking about the schedule. I mean, I'm amped up right now. I'm excited. I wish I was putting on the pads right now. You know, I've got the helmet somewhere back here behind me. I might have to put that on a couple times here in these next couple episodes. So watch out, be on the lookout for those. And we're gonna have great guests for you. Rob was definitely a versatile guest, so we could talk about a little bit of everything, but we are definitely taking a lot of your guys' requests. We're already reaching out to people for future episodes, and if you have any more ideas, we definitely want to hear them.
Absolutely. Please tweet at Once a Duck, at Samuel101TS, at JustFollow61 for any of those requests for guests. Hey, even if you just want to get your own two cents on the episode, please tweet us your ideas, tweet us your thoughts. We'll be sure to get through a couple every episode. I know that I'm definitely excited for what the season has in store.
Yeah, and you can go ahead now and follow our YouTube, Once a Duck YouTube. You can like, subscribe, you know, click the bell. Make sure you're going and sharing with all your friends, because yeah, we only wanted to do this because we thought our fans would really enjoy it. We thought it'd add an extra level to the podcast of engagement, and it would give us great opportunities to go through more of the great stuff I found. We can even go through and talk about old formations, plays, things that we used to do. And now, instead of just talking about it, we can provide a visual medium for these things. So not only that, going through and finding new stuff we can give away. There's a whole lot to look forward to this season, not just the games, not just what we're talking about, but yeah, all the engagement we're gonna have through this show with you guys on Twitter, Instagram, SoundCloud, everywhere you can find us.
Absolutely. Well, Nick, our first episode is just about in the books, but next week we are gonna talk Oregon versus Stanford. We are going to talk about that 09 game that we referenced a little bit earlier, the tremendous 2010 ball game, which so many Duck fans remember so well, the game that I like to call the statement that Oregon football was for real in 2010, that 2011 ball game. I know another one that was just awesome. Oregon announcing itself to the nation yet again. Hey, we can even get into some of the heartbreak of 2012 and years after that, if you want to. It's up to the fans, though. Tell us what you want to hear about. We are here to talk Oregon versus Stanford. We're gonna have another great guest on, and it's gonna be a fun episode.
Yeah, and you know, we've already decided who our guest is gonna be for that episode, but all our fans out there who are interested and want to take a stab, any Ducks players, particularly football, that'll be the one hint you get for now. Follow on Twitter for more. If any of you is first to guess it, you'll get a shout out on our next episode.
Absolutely. And then anything else, Nick, that you can think of? Because I think that we've got a great episode right here.
Hey, man, you know, I couldn't be more excited for getting into the season, maybe trimming up the COVID beard some here at some point. But yeah, it's just great to be back. Real fun to be with you, Sam. And I'm excited for people to see this.
Absolutely. Again, one more time, follow at Once a Duck everywhere that you want to. That's where we are. The Once a Duck, Always a Duck podcast. We're going to be here every single week. None of this bi-weekly stuff we did last season. Every single week, we're here, and it's going to be a whole lot of fun.
Take it easy, everyone. Once a duck, always a duck.